It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So I'll just kind of do a little intro for my show. So the Outskirts podcast until now has been a first person story platform. We just have storytellers and it's pretty new, but I wanted to kind of evolve to incorporate an interview based platform as well. So you're actually our first guest in that regard. So what a guest. I'm so thrilled to have you. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for the invite. Glad to be here.
So William Ramsey, you are a podcaster, an author, researcher. You're also an attorney. Is that right?
With the State Bar of California. That's right.
Okay. I've been following you for years. I actually know that. I'm just speaking for the sake
it's
of my
listeners.
It's part
of my bio. It's part of my bio.
Okay. Yeah. I've been listening to you for so long, but I'm just thinking about, so at what point did you kind of leave the practice of law and switch gears more into research and reporting? And
good question. I think I probably lasted about 5 years and then kind of wanted to do something else. I mean, I was kind of burnt out when I was done in 98 after I was in DC too. That was a bit of a eye-opening experience. So then when I got into the practice, I was kind of like, is this really what I want to do? So I left and I went into real estate. I did real estate finance for a while, but I was always researching. Like I was researching even when I was in law school. I think it was that I did there was a lot of the history that I didn't know. And I had a decent amount of reading in history too. So I think it opened myself up and a lot of things weren't covered by the corporate media. So I really wanted to figure out what I was, you know, I was being propagandized. I think we all are. So I was really trying to figure out, is some of this stuff real? Is there evidence for it? Can you actually reference the evidence? So I really kind of went off and was reading all the time. And I would read a lot of, alternate media would be accurate from the 90s. A lot of different things, non-corporate. There were other people out there in the field. I was always I used to read anti-war, a lot of What Really Happened. Those were things that I was reading.
So when you say, are some of these things actually real? By these things, we're talking about what would be termed conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
I think that's it's an inappropriate label. You know, I think that some of the theoretical, I was trying to prove that theories were real. So a lot of these conspiratorial events are real. JFK, 9/11. Yeah,
what was the entry point for you where you first thought maybe some of these things actually are real?
I think it was being in DC because you're kind of outside of the bubble. So you actually see things going on. I mean, I went to when Clinton got inaugurated, I went to the inauguration. I had people I knew who worked on the Hill. So I saw it from the inside. I saw a lot of corruption. I saw the drunks. I saw the sex pests. I actually was in the House of Representatives building, and I had a friend who worked for a congressman, and they had me deliver important papers to this guy who was from Oregon at the time. And they said, just don't worry, I'm larger than your average bear. So they just said, don't ask questions, just go deliver this. And I found out later that if any other member of Congress would send a woman on there, he would just give her the octopus treatment. So that's why they sent me. So there was just things like that I saw. I didn't come from a wealthy background. I had some advantages, but I worked during law school, so I worked right on the hill. I was actually a server at this Mexican restaurant. So I'd see these guys come in and drink double scotches at lunch. And it was amazing, too. Like, there was one guy from Florida. He was wasted all day. And then I saw his picture that they sent him back. He was from, like, Central Florida or Orlando. And he looked prim and proper and everything. I'm like, wow, they must put him together to send him back to the whole country. So you see things in there. I worked briefly on the Vince Foster case. So I knew a lot of the people. I knew a guy by the name of Patrick Milton, who passed away. His lawyer was John Clark. I worked for him. I interned for him. I actually delivered the addendum for the Star report to a lot of the members of Congress. So I was kind of in that kind of alternate space, even as a dumb law student. So I would say that was it. So that was always, I was always curious. And there was bodies popping up in D.C. all the time that never made the news. Very suspicious deaths. People would fall out of buildings or get run over. So, you know, those things are never reported. And it was a very petty environment. There's a lot of power games and things like that going on there. A lot of blackmail, even before Epstein. So that would be like really the beginning. So that was like when I'd watch the media and go, wow, these guys are either working for these guys, and it's panned out to be all factual that they're members of either party, or they're, you know, the party politics are putting these people into places, positions of power. So that would be why I was alternate, and that's kind of just was it. I was really, by the time I published my first book in 2010, I had years of reading and writing in the under. I'm 54 now, so I'd already had years of kind of alternate stuff without ever publishing anything. But I think that's really kind of really where it started. It's probably like the scales came off my eyes when I was in my mid-20s. And I was still willing to read the articles and talk to people. There were all kinds of JFK analysts when I was younger would talk about it, and everybody thought something was sketchy. Now with the internet, I think everybody knows that a lot of the cover stories are lies. JFK was, you know, assassinated by other members of the family. It was a coup. So
right. Yeah. So that's kind of the entry point for me into governmental conspiracy theory, at least. It causing me maybe first to ponder whether or not I can actually trust the people who are governing me, you know? I never even actually watched the Oliver Stone film. I just, you know, through podcasting. I'm 10 years younger than you are, but I don't know, I'd say for the last 15 years, I've been consuming alternate media through podcasts and,
it's changed my personality for the better, because I've learned actually that so many of the stories are just total propaganda and lies. So I don't trust anything that comes out of the government. I've seen it from the inside. So yeah, they're very corrupt and self-dealing. And I think this whole COVID event is a perfect example that they will screw the entire population to make a buck. And those are the kind of people who stayed in D.C. Like, I knew from a year when I was there, I was getting out of there. Like, I did not want to stay there. So
I understand.
It says a lot about the old parasites that have been there forever.
Yeah. The type of people who the system is rigged to favor a certain type of personality. And, the system at large, I guess there are good people winning small victories here and there all over the place.
I agree.
But, in general, it's a fallen world, right? So,
yeah, I think so.
Kind of segueing into the world of magic, I guess magic with a K. That's the kind of stuff that I always had an interest in, even as a child. Maybe Lewis would say I have an unhealthy or an unsafe interest in it historically, just because, how he describes it in Screwtape Letters is, you know, you can fault on either side. You know, either you're a naturalist or you're in danger of becoming a magician. I've never dabbled, but I just, even now, I enjoy hearing about it. And I guess that's just an honest thing to say. I'm a person of faith. And for me, faith is a hard won thing on the one hand. On the other hand, it's a gift. But it's a thing to be lived. And as the book says, it's a thing to be worked out with fear and trembling, right? So there aren't a lot of shortcuts in the biblical route to true faith. Whereas I think, on the other hand, as one who believes in a spiritual realm and in a spiritual darkness, and then maybe even, it's the right way to describe it, Lucifer, a corporal evil. I think that there are displays of power that are accessible and that are on display if you know where to look. I think that's been my experience. I've seen things and I've collected stories of this type that, like I say, on the one hand, it's been an affirmation of my faith. And then on the other hand, I kind of get a rush out of it, you know? Why do we like scary stories? I'm sure it has to do with death and the desire to transcend death and all of that. All things that Christ is supposed to provide for the Christian, that, you know, a walk and a hard-won victory, I guess would be how I'd describe it. To live as Christ, you know, the Bible says.
There's a lot of forces against you. No
question. Yeah, so that's it. I've just been kind of struggling with that, I guess. I don't know why. I didn't intend to say all this, but I have.
I mean, what do you? Why do you call yourself a Christian? Do you think you're a Christian? Do you think that you were you raised a Christian? I was born a Catholic. Like that okay. was my faith, but. I would call myself just a Bible believing Christian because I read a lot of it. So I think the Catholics, a lot of these denominations keep a lot of the totality, the wholeness of the Gospels and the epistles. They keep very important pieces out. And I think that's kind of like the part of how the Bible is presented. It's almost presented as a bumper sticker theology where little snippets are popped out to you know, give you kind of a little piece of it, but not telling the full story. You have to watch and listen to the Gospels in their entirety. It's very important. But yeah, I would call myself a Bible believing Christian.
I would call myself that too. And really, I guess I first picked up the Bible with intent to read it through maybe in 2015, 2016, after a 2-year bout with a horrible illness. And I just had this conviction, you know, to actually read the whole thing so you'll have the verses in its context. And that really changed my life and inspired me. And I found it not to be very laborious, surprisingly. And I'm still doing it. I'm not starting over and going back through it, but I'm still reading it regularly. It transformed me. It empowered me, and it also kind of stifled the progress I was making in the pursuits I had, the desires I had that were kind of unrelated to following Jesus. That's a struggle I have, figuring out how to balance what I feel like the Gospels are telling me and the pressures that I face in the culture, professionally, you know, in the world of entertainment, all of it. Trusting God to provide for today, not storing up treasure, not worrying, you know, and then loving my neighbor and even my enemy. All that is just radical. And it is absent from most of the church experience I've had.
They leave a lot out. They leave a lot
out. Yeah.
I'm not sure I get the full truth of the gospel from any pulpit. So some of the schisms between denominations are kind of silly in a lot of ways. A lot of those guys are just making a living, so they're going to tell their flock certain things. So
yeah,
sad, I think it's unfortunate. Like that's what I learned. I didn't always know that, you know.
Yeah, I remember when I felt like I realized that for the first time too. I was an adult, married with kids, and we were just kind of in a position of comfort. And it was at that same time, you know, when just digging in to my Bible and spending time in prayer, when I just felt called out of a large church. I'm still waiting to see what he does next. In fact, I have a meeting tonight with a Catholic priest who has just agreed to speak with me about that tradition and practice. And that's something I never thought I would be doing. You obviously grew up Catholic, so I could probably get a lot of information from you, but maybe for another
I don't know
time.
Where I could help. I mean, there's no Pope in the Bible. There's,
right.
There's a lot of Christ being in Jerusalem railing against the Pharisees and the scribes and them loving the, you know, the praise of their fellow man, praying in public and plundering the widow's purse, so to speak. So
yeah, it's,
you know, the Catholic Church is very temporal, or at least a lot. Maybe it's, I think its popularity has waned, but at its time, prime, it was really super potent. I mean, and I mean, look what they did in the New World. I mean, a lot of that was divvying up things by Catholic Church or even the Anglican Church. So, but yeah, there's a lot of problems I have with the priesthood.
Yeah, I'm confused about it. I mean, it seems like problems. I'm kind of excited to give this educator a chance to explain it from his perspective. Most of my problems or my questions, you know, we know not to judge any system by its abuses, right? But then there are just flat out contradictions that I see. And that's the kind of thing I want to have addressed. Biblical contradictions or you know, there's, I understand they have books that I don't have access to. So it's just something I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church has a lot of resources, but I think
yeah.
There's a lot of hypocrisy, and it was really just a political position back in Italy, back in the medieval ages. The Pope was, you know, like a lackey of the Medici family or something like that, and it grew. But whether it was holy, a Roman, or an empire, you know, it's kind of like,
yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't like a bitter leaver of the Catholic Church. I just read the stuff and some of the priests and. I think that they engage. I think there's some kind of like. I think there's like a religious abuse. Like some of the stuff they go through. I think the priests are a little bit too high and mighty in their position. And there's a lot of abuse that goes on in the Catholic Church. And there's a lot of abuse that happens in the Protestant Church too. When we spoke, so
yeah, they, I know a little bit.
Have a monopoly on it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Part of my reaction or part of my interest. I guess it's unrelated, but I was raised Protestant. I'm like my great grandfather was a pastor on one side, and then both grandfathers. And then my dad was also a pastor in the DC metro area. Montgomery County was where I grew up.
Nice.
And I guess
what denomination?
Assemblies of God. So it's charismatic. I've been in a few of those churches, and in fact the one I grew up in, my memories of it are really, really good, and a sense of community, and I don't really recall a lot of you know, you see a lot of these funny videos on Instagram nowadays of just memes, people just making fun of these kind of holy roller types. I don't recall a lot of that. There were people speaking in tongues, and then there were people giving translations. That's something I've never experienced personally, but that faith or that religious, that body kind of fell apart for me as I grew older, just various circumstances. Didn't work for me anymore. But if we could just talk about your areas of research in the realm of like the occult.
I didn't know much about the occult. I was never an occultist. I never practiced. I was never interested. I had always seen names around, and I know that those sections were in bookstores. I worked in libraries. I knew about that stuff, but I really went in deep. I came out of 9/11, really, because there was all kinds of strange, weird numerology in 9/11. These numbers, the repeats of these numbers were beyond the realm of, you know, probability. Improbability. They had to be there for a reason. So that was really it. So that's kind of like through 9/11, and that led me to Crowley. And then I just kind of expanded kind of naturally on that. It was almost like God laid it out in front of me, because I studied Crowley. I put out Prophet of Evil in 2010. And then I ran into the West Memphis 3 case, which was huge in the news and kind of still is around. And that led me to actually seeing this kind of real application of Crowley's ideas and a network of these people. There's no question there's a network, like So that was actually happened when I was trying to study the follow on or write the follow on book to Prophet of Evil, which is Children of the Beast. That was 2014. So that really just kind of opened my eyes to different areas within the occult. And is it real? And are these people serious? And for me, it was all verified. Like, it's real. They're serious. They're writing. They're looking for followers just as much as any Christian church would do it.
Yeah.
And they're networked. So I think that that was it. I tried to understand. I'd never really kind of looked at Crowley trying to understand his magic. Like, I've never really transposed his rituals and stuff like that. So I looked at it much more objectively, kind of from a historical, cultural level. But, you know, and it led up to my last book, 2021, which was Global Death Cult, about the Order of Nine Angles. I knew nothing about them, but they're having real world effects. People are dying all over the world because of these guys' ideas. And it's in the common culture now too, because I've been writing about like Ed Sheeran stuff.
Yeah, it's in the pop culture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of in the general awareness as far as Super Bowl halftime shows and
They're initiating the world into it, yeah, as much as possible. So you see the people at the highest levels of the culture, and probably politics is just not open or aware, but they're probably all occultists of one. I think that was the Pizzagate or the Podesta email show. That this woman, Abramovich, is all over the place. She's in high fashion. She's in politics. She's with the elite. She's holding, you know, weird public so-called, quote, art, unquote, thing. So it's happening. Like, it's not really believable. It's kind of fairly recent in our culture, maybe since the 60s. But the real predominant religion at the top is the occult. You're swimming in the occult. So it's kind of interesting to see that happen and not have the kind of intellectual class actually look at that, which I think is a willful blindness. It's not popular. It's definitely not within the Overton window of acceptable discourse. But I was willing to kind of, I mean, I didn't really have much at stake. So I wasn't even a public, really that public of a person. So I didn't really care. I just saw what I saw and I just wrote it down. Like,
so what extent do you, to what extent do you think that viewing these occult activities and the symbology as art kind of helps keep the reality of their belief system suppressed, or maybe like just degenerated to a view of something that they, you know, maybe they have a painting on their wall or a sculpture, or they'll have a social event, a spirit cooking, and that's just good fun and that's art and it's nothing more than that. Yeah, that seems like it seems to be how they want to talk about it, how it's discussed, right?
It's for public consumption saying that stuff. I think those are all introductory. I think she probably knows tons of ritual magic. I've seen a picture of her sex magic, like literal like nudity and stuff like that that's suppressed. So I know she goes deep, and her autobiography goes like she's communicating with spirits from the very beginning. So I think a lot of these guys would like the public to use words like dabbler, you know, entertain. But some of these people like her, she is into blood and pentagrams, the whole bit, just like Eccles. That's their religion. So whatever it costs, blood, you know, whatever they're told. So I think that there's a lot of public thing. And I think it's very convenient for her to just call it art, because then people can interpret it art. And then the people who know magic know exactly what she's up to. She's practicing ritual magic and all kinds of magical techniques with a K. So I'm not deceived. I mean, I know what she's doing.
Yeah. You had a great conversation a few days ago, maybe with Joe Atwell, on the occult of 20th century. Yeah. And he seemed to recognize that these things were happening, but he referred to it as sort of a bamboozlement. He kind of wrote it all off as just a distraction, as if it were thrown out for the masses to say, oh, they're just doing occultic things, but really the goal was for Marxism to take root somehow.
Right, something else. Yeah, it was all kind of like a camouflage. Like, that was his interpretation. I don't have that interpretation. I think those guys, like Hitler was a full-on occultist. You could call him that. I think that's fair. He called himself a pagan, and how the paganistic worldview and occultism overlap, I think, are, you know, they overlap a lot. So I didn't agree with that. Well, I don't agree with that. Well, on Caesar's Messiah either, his anti-Christian thing where the Flavian dynasty invented it. It's ahistorical, the historical record. And the founding father, the church fathers were, some of those guys were like directly affiliated with some of the apostles. Like they tied themselves to John the Apostle. So yeah, he ignored that in there. Maybe I have to get through his whole book. But yeah, his view is kind of like the other view of Crowley and all these other things, that Crowley is like his whole magical world is a cover for his intelligence, right? Instead of he is an occultist acting like his intelligence. So it's inverted in my mind. But in other people's, this is, I get that question all the time. How serious is Crowley? What's his intelligence? Isn't this just a cover for his intelligence? But all Crowley was doing from the time he left Cambridge to his death was practicing magic and building this thing. He was the head of the OTO and other groups. So to say that he was a dabbler or this was some kind of like camouflage, we can get into the double helix of occultism and intelligence in the 20th century or something, because it is a double helix. A lot of those guys in Intel are occultists, whether they're, I mean, if you want to call the occult masonry or something, which I would call a cult. I mean, it's really a matter of definition, but Masons are all over the place.
Secret knowledge, bones.
Yeah. When Truman signed the National Security Act in 1947, there were like four Skull and Bonesmen right behind him, people who'd been initiated in the crypt. You know, people had urinated on, literally urinated on them. And it's you're telling me that this isn't some kind of important connection, or there's some meaning between these people and intelligence and the CIA? Give me a break. George Bush was one of them.
What purpose would it serve? Yeah, other than to,
But it takes that, you have to
cast suspicion on them. If,
right, but
it'd be better to be a fake Presbyterian than to be a fake occultist, right?
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, so some of that thinking to me is odd, because you had to have the will. Like Crowley always talked about the will. You have to have the will, and Hitler too. You have to have the will to do that. So where do you get that kind of perverse will? Because if you're in the Christian church, it's God's will always. You're always our Father who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name. That thy will be done, right? So, and then you see this kind of evil will through the CIA all over the world. I mean, really, the U.S. was left in the position that Hitler wanted to be in, which was full global domination. I don't know if there was any country we weren't meddling with. And they had the will to do it. So, and still too, to this day, I mean, we're kind of in the end of the empire, I think, is close. It could be within this month, actually, once people start dumping the American dollar and we go into hyperinflation. Like, people are going to be shocked. We're going to be back in Hitler, Weimar Republic, post-World War I Germany, like, which
So
it's never good. It's never good.
Do you think, like, right now we're experiencing kind of the fallout of the implementation of Ordo Ab Chaea or Solvit Coagula?
I don't know. Well, I could say that we're kind of at the end of the American empire. If you have that much debt, and you're meddling around in wars and conflicts that are unnecessary and that are actually going to facilitate your demise, you're at the end of empire. Like, we're tinkering around on a border war we should have nothing to do with in Ukraine. It doesn't make any sense unless you're super corrupt and you're laundering money through there. And you installed the guy anyway. Zelensky was installed by the CIA in a color revolution. So, And he's like oppressing all his media, much like people here in the United States. Weird, kind of tyrannical, strange.
If you look at the philosophies of these people, though, like if a lot of them are Crowleyists or a lot of them are Masons, right? If you look at Crowley's philosophy, the whole of the law, do what thou wilt, right? One clue to me about the origin of that philosophy is that, as a governmental system, it kind of dies the death of its own qualification, right? The first generation that actually lives that out isn't going to be too concerned with the next one, right?
Right.
It's not a self-perpetuating form of government. Do what you want, right? So it was never sustainable. So, but yet it persists, right? And it's kind of adopted by these, I guess, the Marxist governments that we kind of hear about. And I thought, how could they be so minded on the future when they don't believe in the spirit? The selfish people that I know in life are selfish and they don't care about, you know, they have a hard time planning for the future, much less the next generation, you know?
Right.
So it just seemed like they would have a hard time, you know, having
and they don't.
Kind of,
I don't
a
think they
long-term
care.
Agenda.
Yeah, they don't have a. Yeah. They may have a long-term agenda, but it's not for stability and security, right?
Right. So it could either be to create
can.
Chaos, or yeah. they could be acting out the agenda of the one that's giving them power. Things that I kind of think about.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That's what I would say is happening. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that a lot of these people are Luciferians, Satanists. I mean, I know the Lucis Trust exists, right? So I was just watching a Lucis Trust, you know, Alice Bailey, the Maitreya, their Christ. They're not a Jesus Christ, by the way. It's their Christ. But they're involved with the WEF. They're doing like meditation practicing and supporting them for the implementation of the Great Reset. So it's all spiritual, but it's satanic. It's Luciferian. So there's a lot of people out there like that. And
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I think the effects are just catastrophic, really. You can see this through the mass poisoning, through the COVID shots, and the breakdown of borders and laws. Here in the States, well, I mean, I don't even know if we're a constitutional republic anymore. It's arguable. We certainly don't seem to be talking about the Constitution if people's First Amendment rights are being violated or abnegated. So anyway, there's definitely a spiritual war going on, and they believe in their spirit. They believe in, you know, Lucifer as the great knowledge bringer serpent. The Lucis Trust is right there in the mix still today, 2023, no question.
Are they like
would be called the Consuls.
Aren't they a publishing house for... I've
yeah, they used to
before.
Be called Lucifer Trust, I think, but it was Alice Bailey. She was kind of she became kind of a spiritualist, and she started receiving books from Ra Hur Kui or something, Kumi. It was kind of like Crowley's thing, but one of the Ascended Masters. She's like part of the Ascended Master tradition. So she was receiving this, and she received these books, and they have, and it's all about kind of globalism. Breaking down a thing. They have a special UN. I think they have an affiliation with the UN. So the Lucis Trust is still around. I forgot what her name is.
I'll have to look into that further. Yeah, I keep forgetting to look that up, the Lucis Trust. I've heard that reference so many times. This on the subject of, what do you call it, automatic writing or downloaded books, like in the style of... Received books, yeah. That's another topic that I find really...
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. So Crowley had his, right?
Right.
And then before Crowley, there was Blavatsky, right?
Blavatsky, right.
And her book was...
The Secret Doctrine and Isis Unveiled.
Okay. And Hitler was...
Hitler had the book, supposedly The Secret Doctrine, by his bedside and got a lot of his information from him. You see the overlap between Blavatsky, the root races, the Aryans are at the top. There's, you know, it's kind of like a caste system that she had. But the person I was looking at is Christine Morgan. She's the president of the Lucis Trust. And she had a video in 2021. But really, I mean, it's a remarkable interview. She admits so much. But people get deceived because they use terms from Christianity, but they are different meaning, you know.
Yeah.
But she says, who is Lucifer, the shining one? Cross text. He's the beginning of self-consciousness, evolution, and initiation. So she lays it down, but it's kind of in a benign way. Instead of having kind of like the caricature of a Satanist, a bald-headed guy with a, you know, beard or whatever, she's like this... a nice, amiable looking housewife type, but heavy duty stuff.
So you see kind of all over the place this general acceptance of what maybe they wouldn't call it supernatural. They might say there's interdimensional beings, and they apologize for themselves with string theory or something. But really, it's no more abstract to us than, you know, a biblical narrative, or being accepting of the idea that there are angels, demons, a supreme creator. They've just...
Right. Yeah, they have a spiritual worldview. It's
they have a spiritual worldview. They just don't... That is that kind of... is that what's happening? I'm thinking of this C.S. Lewis book, The Hideous Strength, where he talks about the progression of... or the resurgence. Basically, he takes you from these atheistic and naturalistic college campuses and the professors who don't really have a devotion to truth. They're just in it for prestige and power. And then as their Marxism kind of flails and it dies on its own merits, then there's a resurgence of this supernatural element. And all of a sudden, they're promoting paganism and witchcraft again.
Right.
And
yeah,
that's kind of what's happening, right? He was prophetic in that way.
Yeah, no doubt. I was told that here in L.A., the number one religion among teenage girls is Wicca, is witchcraft. So that's the kind of the new resurgence. And I don't know, if you go back and look at the Old Testament, it's kind of like the children of Israel are being obedient, and then they stray off to the dark gods, and then they come back, and then God says, stop messing up, come back to the straight and narrow, I'll forgive you, and then they're forgiven, and then all the prophets are always fighting against, you know, the priest of Baal or something like that. So I would say it's probably not much different. I always liken the New Old Testament to present day. It's probably the same thing. There's a lot of occultists out there, and a lot of people being led astray and intentionally led astray. I think the country's been led astray from the Christian values, and to its own detriment. I think it was very destructive. Probably was very Christian all the way up to the 50s, the 60s, kind of peeled people off. And that was a do what thou wilt generation for sure.
Would you say that it was very Christian in spite of its origins and its founding upon Masonic principles? Or,
you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I think that you can go back. Are those guys Christians? Are they Masons? Are they deists? They're obviously very intelligent, but I think the population itself, if you look at de Tocqueville, like he said, the population was very well informed and very religious. Like that was their backbone. And a lot of those guys, Adams was like very much like, you know, this is going to be founded on Christianity. That's what's going to keep it together. So I think that the population still to this day actually is mostly pretty religious. It's just the mass media makes you think otherwise. It actually inverts everything, kind of like Satan. But I think actually the mass media in the American country is satanic, actually, without question. So, and inverts everything. But I think the population still has a spiritual worldview. I think that they've just been force-fed a bunch of nonsense and been mind-controlled. But yeah, so, I think that, but everything goes in cycles. You can go through the Great Awakenings. There's been four Great Awakenings. They're using that term again. I don't think in the correct meaning. It's kind of like the QAnon Great Awakening meaning. But, you know, we're just in the cycle. I think a lot of people are like, they also look at like how dark it gets, and they're like, wow, I got to recoil from this. This is getting dark. Like you have kid drag shows being supported by the government, and they get their own protection from the police. Like, that's evil. That's Sodom and Gomorrah. Like, you should be terrified. Go back and read the Bible. See what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah and all these people. You can see what these Sodom and Gomorrah people look like. You just look at these nut jobs with pink hair or orange hair. That's probably what they look like in Sodom and Gomorrah. Transgender, gender fluidity. I bet that's the kind of terminology they used. It's not in the Bible, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were just like those kind of whack jobs today. I don't know why they're called leftists. They're really do what thou willers. That's really it. So.
Right. Yeah. That. A lot of people probably feel like their democratic views have been hijacked by extremists or occultists even. I don't know how many people are actually talking about the influence of occult in politics.
It's not fashionable. It's not within the acceptable box of personal discourse for a reason. The occultists want to keep the information occulted. They want to, much like an intelligence agency. They're like, that's the whole other thing about CIA or any intelligence agency, is they want to occult their knowledge of how they're playing you, using mind control, manipulation, social engineering, behavioral science. They don't want you to know any of that stuff, because then you'll be like, oh, I'm aware. Then I'm inoculated against it. They don't want that. So they occult all that information. The CIA knows tons of information. They have tons of information they've compiled. It's basically, the CIA is kind of like Hogwarts. It's like they know everything. Drugs, manipulation, social manipulation, how to fake an thing, how to overthrow governments, all the steps you got to take, all that stuff. They've got it down to a science, literally.
And that's just behavioral science. They understand how to manipulate human beings. And it makes sense that they would keep that kind of practice and the knowledge of how to manipulate secret, I guess. But it also...
Because then you're supposed to think this is all normal, right? So they normalize that stuff. So once they lay down all that stuff, like I think the COVID protocols, there's actually a military weaponization that was used in a domestic fashion. So they could keep hammering the public with this disinfo and lies. And the public didn't know it. They didn't know they were being, there was a military operation against them. They're starting to figure it out. The Americans are starting to figure out that, because there's a couple of really good researchers, Latipova and Watt. It's a military operation. It's a military sophisticated operation with the control over the media and totally weaponized against the American people to get them to take something that's actually against their best interest and make money and facilitate this whole breakdown of the country. So.
Or even, to break the will, maybe. I keep thinking about that motto where you just, it's sort of like divide and conquer. You create chaos and then you establish the new order. There's obviously a lot of people using that terminology, the new world order. But I can look at the events of the last couple of years and see how it's sort of the culmination of the kind of thing you're talking about, this occulted belief system where their motto actually is, and I guess I'm speaking about the Masonic influence, but I don't know, maybe other mottos are kind of similar.
It's there. Like, well, one thing, like, to remember,
like on the Baphomet, right? The Solve et Coagula, isn't that kind of a similar idea where you dissolve and then reform?
It's a magical formula. But yeah, I think that if you look at Crowley, remember a lot of his stuff is post-Masonic, so everybody already went through Masonry. So they went through Masonry and then became a member of the Golden Dawn or the OTO or stuff like that. So what's the difference here? Who knows what some of these other things are? But I mean, I was in D.C. You almost never see a picture of the House of the Temple anywhere in this country. You have to go and like look at it through yourself. It's a wonderful building. It's incredible. It's totally ornate. Somebody spent millions and millions of dollars on it. It has the two sphinxes in front, which are total magic right out of Eliphas Levy, which is to know, to will, to dare, and remain silent. So these guys know all this stuff. The public doesn't know. It's occulted knowledge.
To know, to will, to
dare, and remain silent.
Dare to do it, and then to remain silent. Yeah, that's exactly. So doesn't that's feel the like riddle that's of the Sphinx.
Go, you, the, yeah,
something,
look it up.
Something's being pulled on us. But nobody's really fessing up to it. It does feel like often like we're living under the influence of some bad magic, some practices. Yeah, you know?
I think it's been happening for centuries. So,
yeah. And on the issue of supernatural influence, though, magic. So it makes sense that a lot of these practitioners, whoever they are from whatever groups, if they even work in unison, that they would do it strictly for purposes of influence, and they would the tactics that they're using don't necessarily have to make the leap into the realm of supernatural, right? But is there a supernatural element to this magic in some cases?
I think in their mind there is, absolutely. I think that they are trying to rely on spirits or communicate with entities and stuff like that. So it's always there. If you look through Bailey, Blavatsky, they're talking to entities. Crowley himself, I mean, I should go back down and say all the entities that he talked to. It was like 10, like different AWAs and the wizard. And he had all these names for these other things that he's commute. Lamb. these people he's communicating with. So I wouldn't see why some of these other people, there's no other, you know, there's nothing different.
Oh, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Yeah. It just hit me. So the supernatural element is, the ideas came from the supernatural realm. So they're writing these books, these received books, and the information is coming from without. Is that
right? Absolutely.
So it's born. Communicate. It's born of.
Look up Barbara Marx Hubbard. Look her up. She's like wanted to kill off 1/4 of humanity, but she was an automatic writer. There's like videos of her closing her eyes and drawing, you know, writing. And Crowley was kind of like an automatic writer. I don't know if he ever referenced himself in that regard, but he would write stuff once and then be done. But Barbara Marx Hubbard is right there with it, connected with the UN and just like an Alice Bailey. So, these received books are, there's a lot more of them out there. There's one, what was it called? Oh, I have to go back there, but you could look at the Book of Mormon as a received book as well, which is pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I had something on the tip of my tongue on the subject of received information.
But there's a lot in the New Age. If you study the New Age and kind of like its environment, there's a lot of guys receiving stuff like that. Yeah,
that was it. Yeah. Okay. So in regards to aliens, right? So depending on how these people perceive who's speaking to them, or for Crowley, maybe it was some kind of telepathy. I'm not sure. I'm sure you do know. Or for others, you know, it's just like a ghostly transfer of information. But for some, it's, they're communicating with people on the backside of Mars or the moon, right? Or depending on how the entities present themselves. So you have this whole UFO phenomenon. And I can't say, actually, there's Jack Parsons. Didn't he claim to receive some information from
what was it called? The Babylon Working.
Yeah, Alamantra.
The Alamantra was Crowley, 1918. Okay. Okay. That's where he ended up drawing this lamb thing and was communicating with people. Oh. Jack Parsons kind of like was supposed to be, he added on another fourth book of the Book of the Law, which didn't seem to like grip people. He also made the oath of the Antichrist, like he was going to fight against Christ forever. But he was pretty heavy. I mean, so was Hubbard too. So
did he get the information on how to mix that solid rocket fuel from outer space? Or
I don't know. I do know that he claimed that the devil, you know, appeared to him when he was a young man, and that was it. And so he was always kind of, and his father wasn't around. So, and Crowley called him the most important, his most important follower was Jack Parsons in the Agape Lodge. So I'd have to go back through and reread that, a lot of that stuff, but I did do a section on him in Children of the Beast. So I was pretty familiar
on Parsons.
He used to recite, when he would shoot stuff off into the sky, he'd recite Crowley's Hymn to Pan, which is kind of interesting. That's kind of Crowley's most notable, memorable poem.
I'm intrigued, but I'm not gonna look it up. I don't want to know it.
Pan is the representation of the devil. You know, it's like another kind of, it's like, what is it? Prometheus or something like that. It's kind of like something in the Western, you know, esoteric tradition that they use, symbolizes the devil.
Yeah, he's like a fawn figure, right?
Yeah, it's Pan and like the pipes, and he's half goat.
So, I'm just going through a chronology here. We had Blavatsky was predated Crowley. Crowley was, I guess, somewhat of a mentor figure to Parsons, or at least he acknowledged.
Yeah, no
Parsons.
Doubt. Yeah, there's tons of writing in between them. They're writing to each other and stuff like that.
And then Parsons and Hubbard were kind of contemporaries, and they had a split.
Business partners. Then Hubbard ran off with Parsons' girlfriend or wife or something like that at the time.
Okay. And then not long after they're doing these things in the desert, shooting rockets into the sky, we have the Roswell incident.
That's right. It's 47, is that right?
I think so. What was that about the time when they were?
Yeah, it was before. I think Parsons died in early 50s. Hubbard started Dianetics in 48, Scientology 50. So it was before that. It was like after the war.
Okay. Time, yeah. And so basically since then, we, that kind of opened the conversation with the, or at least among human beings, about the possibility of alien life. And that's just kind of escalated since then, right? To now, to where you're seeing it on the news and they're not denying it. Have they flat out admitted that, that such things exist, or where are they with that now? Do you know?
I don't know.
The Air Force.
I mean, I guess they're saying there's, I mean, people are seeing stuff. So what they are is another thing. I'm not the extraterrestrial person. I'm extra dimensional events. Cause they emulate kind of people's, when they used to see demons back in the day, you know, they get scared, something appears, weird things happen. They call on Jesus, those things. Yeah.
That's the assumption I make, is that this is all demonic. And that for me, I guess the Bible kind of serves as an Occam's razor in that it provides the simplest, most comprehensive explanation of kind of everything happening in the unseen realm. And it makes sense to me too. You know, if you try to examine the enemies, what would I do if I were him? You know, you kind of want to cover your bases because he doesn't know the mind of God. He doesn't even have the ability to probably read our minds. I don't think he's not described as being omniscient or omnipresent, but he's been around the whole time and he probably is a pretty good predictor of future events. And if he has influence, and if he's disseminating information and influencing the trajectory of science and philosophy, political philosophy, he's kind of running the show here, is the language that the Bible uses. He being Lucifer, I guess. I'm a little bit confused on the different names, Satan, Lucifer. I've heard it discussed that they're
different entities. I think that they cover the same, you know, fallen angel. That Christ talked about. I saw him fall like lightning from heaven. So the rebel, Satan.
That's the understanding I have. That's what I roll with. There's the main adversary, and he's kind of in charge. The same one who obviously had the power to provide Christ with the things that he offered him, right? Certainly he knew Jesus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Would see through his lies. You know, if he took Jesus up on a mountain and said, I'll give you all this if you do this, I kind of tend to believe that he actually did have the power to do that. So moving forward.
He was supposedly in the Bible, he was tempted three times, but then it goes on. I can't remember which gospel it was, but then among other temptations. So we don't know the full story about what was going on, but we do know that right at the end, you know, at the Last Supper, Satan enters into Judas, right? So there's a lot of things. And then like Paul even says, I think it was Hymenaeus Alpha, give them over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, I think is what the quote is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, which is interesting. It's an interesting thing. And that's actually one of Crowley's followers. He called himself Hymenaeus Beta, like after Hymenaeus Alpha.
Really?
Yes. And his name was Grady McMurtry.
Wow. So these people, moving back to modern times, and just in the context of your research and in the books you've written, these occultists, I don't know if you can, I was going to say crimes aside, but I don't know if you can remove someone like Eccles from his crimes, or if it would be appropriate to talk about him apart from those crimes. But as a practitioner of magic, that's somebody who you've studied, I don't know how much of your study was aimed at the type of magic he practices. And well,
the person who influenced him the most was Crowley and Joel Osteen, which is very strange, but he mentioned Crowley. So Crowley's like intertwined with his whole life, whether it was on the stand, whether it was after that, what is his social media postings, his membership in the OTO at one point, he admitted that. So it's not only a mystery to people who haven't read his stuff or read my books. Like, he actually did one of the same rituals Crowley did while he was in jail. It was called the, I can't remember now. Crowley did it in Boliskin Manor, but it's kind of a long actual, it takes a lot of prep and stuff like that. But Crowley, when Crowley did it, he said that he had all these kind of like beings showing up on his porch and stuff. And Boliskin was supposedly haunted even when Jimmy Page had it and had a steward there.
I heard that, yeah. And then it finally burnt down. Yeah, I'd heard those.
It's
stories.
The Abramelin working. It's called the magic of Abramelin the Mage.
So he conjured some kind of demon? That was the aim
Crowley
of it?
Did, yeah. He opened it up. He never finished it. It's supposed to be like a 6-month ritual or something like that, where at the end you get some kind of benefit. But Crowley never finished it, but Eccles did it while he was in jail. He admitted it in his own book.
Didn't you say that he attributed his getting out of jail to the magic he performed while he was in jail?
I think he said, "I got out due to magic. I'd have to go back and learn. I don't know what he said verbatim, but it was something like,
yeah.
He didn't credit the law. He didn't credit the evidence. He didn't credit anything, but it's an extraordinary event. He was in there for 18, 19 years.
Wow. It is extraordinary. And then his following, just look across the landscape of pop culture. You've got like Johnny Depp, different actors who seem to embrace the occult. Whether or not they're openly practicing it is something I don't know, but by association with people like Eccles, we can assume Johnny Depp maybe is some kind of practitioner. And then the people who are in music, there's a guy called Mark Devlin. I don't know if you've...
Yeah, I know Mark Devlin. Yeah, he's
okay, yeah. He does a lot of interesting work about occult symbology in music. And you just wonder if they believe that are they doing this as because they're subjugated and it's part of the deal that they're making. Lucifer wants to be represented on the planet, or is it actual magic being worked?
Right, or both? Right.
Or both? Yeah.
So it's a magical act. A lot of these guys, their creative process is a magical act. My understanding is Depp actually tries to get possessed to become these characters that he does. So he uses these kind of techniques, and he knows a lot. And he's been in pretty heavy duty kind of occult films, whether it's the Harry Potter one or the Ninth Gate or some of these other ones. What's the other one? He's on there making like a full on like magical gesture. I forgot the name of it. Strange Days or Strange Evenings. I forgot what it was. Yeah, Mark Devlin. What was his book?
Truth, Musical Truth, Volume Musical Truth, 1, 2. Right. I think he's got the third one out now.
I think he does too, yeah.
Yeah. He speaks with a lot of passion and conviction. And
I talked to him when I was working for Ed Opperman Report. So I should reach out to him again, see what he's up to.
Yeah.
be a good guest.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about. Oh, it was just back to Abramovich. Is that how you pronounce her name? Abramovich?
I think so. Abramovich.
Yeah, is her name Mariana or Marina?
Marina.
Okay. Yeah, so she claims to be somewhat of a magician slash artist.
I think so. I think
how does she represent herself? And just her associations with... They're far and wide, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Lady Gaga, Kanye West, Jay-Z, the richest people in the world, Soros sons. It just goes on and on and on. A lot of designers. She's influential with kind of like some of the heads of these big design houses, Balenciaga.
Balenciaga, okay. Yeah, so...
Balenciaga, and then what's the other one? It's not, I can't remember right offhand. I can't remember.
So all these influential people, right? Magic aside, what is it that is attractive about these ideas, right? Even if she's just trying to present art, the embodiment of this avant-garde stuff, what I just really don't understand the attraction, and I don't understand. Like I said, if it points to a political system or a way of life, it would be a messy way of life. It would be kind of unsustainable, irresponsible, just a debased life. I really don't get it. But if, on the other hand, there's magic involved and there's some kind of transfer of power, then that would make more sense to me. Do you understand?
I think it's the same thing with Crowley. Like, Crowley's promising people inspiration, knowledge, power. So all kind of worldly things, I think, is why people get involved in magic. Power over your enemies, all that stuff. So I think that's the allure. That's the kind of temptation, right? It's like, oh, wow, I want to be at the top of my game. I want to be at the best of whatever I'm doing. And I can do this and do these rituals and get inspired by evil spirits or something. Some people make that thing, and that you go through history. A lot of these people in courts and are much more involved in magic and stuff like that than you might believe. John Dee, and there's all kinds of magicians all around the courts in France, actually.
Oh, yeah. Like
the lady who carried off, I forgot her name, but she was actually Italian, and she was in the French court that carried out the massacre, if I remember correctly, the massacre of the Templars. She was a full-on witch.
And she, really?
Using a lot of poison and stuff like that. Really intense stuff. And the Marshal of France, Gilles de Rais, like, was a full-on black magician who would rape and kill boys. They think he worked his way through, like, 500 children. Like, his sacrificial death rituals, yeah. Heavy duties. Really heavy-duty stuff. He's much more known on the continent in France. But you can look up Gilles de Rais or Gilles de Retz, R-A-I-S. But I read the court cases. They're all extant. There's two. He was actually tried by a criminal court and an ecclesiastical court, so like a religious court, because his crimes were satanic. And they both found him guilty. They took him right down to the river and burned him to the stake. And he eventually confessed. So.
Wow.
So they're there. They're in history. And even Italy. Yeah. I'm trying to think where else.
You're dating back to Egypt, you know, the where Moses is going to the Pharaoh, he had his sorcerers, you know, at his right hand. That there's a guy I used to follow. He's passed away, I think last year maybe, but John Rankin was his name. He was in Sounds Connecticut. Mm-hmm. He had the theological, it was teii.org. People should check that out. He did a lot of good research. He was working on his PhD. But he wrote an article called Sorcery at the Right Hand of Power. That you probably would enjoy. It wasn't very long.
Check it out.
Yeah. But he kind of gave a little chronology of all that, just where these people are showing up throughout history.
Because I think Paul, in one of the missives, talks about the names of the sorcerers of Pharaoh was Jonas and Jambres. He mentioned that right all the time. So he even mentions it.
Yeah.
Paul does, you know. When was the time of Moses and the Pharaoh? Is that 1600 supposedly BC or 2000 BC.
Yeah, I just always think roughly 2000 years before Jesus.
Yeah, that's it. There it is. Sorcery, yeah, so, at the right hand of power. Still.
Oh, yeah, you found it. Yeah. He was really impressive. He was a special guy. What was I going to say? Oh, so the idea that these affiliations with people like Abramovich or different sorcerers through time, ultimately, though they want to present it as art or as a political idea, really what's on offer is power. That's kind of the assumption that we're both making, it sounds like. They do get rewarded in the way that Jesus was offered a reward for, you know, basically yielding to Satan's will, right? And that kind of thing is still going on today.
I think so. I think if you look at Podesta and what he was doing, I mean, he was the chief of staff for that whole campaign 2016. So
what was he doing? So he had
the spirit cooking, right? And she's fully like has pig's blood and stuff like that. There was mentions of Thelema in his emails, right? So somebody mentioned it. And then there was all kinds of mentions of MAPS, which is kind of like the new word for pedophilia. Minor attracted person is in there. Really? So there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of sketchy stuff.
And you can't talk about that because it just gets, you just get called crazy or conspiracy theorist. The whole Pizzagate, right?
Yeah. Well, they had to twist it, right? So they had to kind of twist it and say that there was all these Pizzagate people believe that there was a jail cell under the pizza place where Hillary Clinton was raping babies. No, I didn't say that, but that's what they want everybody to believe, right?
Well, that's kind of the lot of stuff. Yeah.
They found out that Hunter Biden was hanging out there. You know, people didn't know what Hunter Biden was up to until recently, but he there's times where he was at pizza place. What's he doing around that there too? Yeah.
So that was the function of Q or things like it. That's a standard that's out of the playbook, right? Where you're doing things and then you create a scenario where people are accusing you of doing other bad things that you're not actually doing. And then you just throw the whole baby out with the bathwater.
There you go. Exactly. It's a great deflection tactic. I mean, go back and look at Jimmy Comet's original Instagram posts. They're incredible. There's all kinds of weird statements, Haitian sauce, walnut sauce, hot dogs. I mean, there's mentions and all kinds. They were using like a mob would use terms that only they would know. They were using terms like that too. They were doing something.
It was clearly just inside baseball language. No one could discern this. Something's being, it's code, right? Code. I never looked at it. So was that came out with Julian Assange's stuff? Or
that's what it led to. So it started with, they got Julian Assange dropped the leaked Podesta emails. And then people went through it, and then they're like, what's all this? We're going to meet at this pizza place. Then somebody went to the pizza place, and then they found the Instagram. So it was just following the breadcrumbs back. And so that's what they found. That was all the stuff, and then it became Pizzagate. But that place is sketchy. Comet has, like, the half moons and all the stuff on the front, like it, and the ping pong tables. Like, there's symbol, all very heavy-duty symbolism there. And then they found out that what was it? Elefantis is like one of the top 50 most powerful people in Washington, D.C. Well, how does a guy who owns a pizza place be the 50 most powerful people in D.C. amongst super powerful people? Doesn't make sense. Why would they even put that? That was in the number one, I think it was the Washingtonian or something. Like, it was the number one magazine of Washington.
It's like Epstein. How did he rise to power except through his influence, right? The control he had over these people, whatever he was providing them.
No, they were blackmailing everybody. They had great blackmail operations. Nobody has really gone through and like shown the operations, but there's enough just to sketch people out. Like, they had senators, they had governors, they were blackmailing everybody.
That makes really sense. Good. That seems like the obvious.
And they put
them
in power. I mean, it was incredible. Like, even like, you can look, Giuffre wrote her own biography of their whole experience. And it was included in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. So it was going back to like 2016, 2018. So you can read her biography and say who she was sent to sleep with, right? And in some of those, it's incredible. She was like Richardson, was the governor of New Mexico. So she was supposedly slept with him when she was younger, controlled 17 or 18 or 16. And so he goes on to become like the guy at the UN, right? So they've got stuff on her, him. So they know him, whoever sent that out. And then the other one was Mitchell, Senator Mitchell. Like, you can go Mitchell. She supposedly slept with him when she was younger. And the like the heir to the king, right? Prince Andrew. But Mitchell, follow Mitchell's career. So this is like 2000. She's with Mitchell, and Mitchell goes on to like be the negotiator for the Israeli-Palestinian peace conference or something like that in like 2010 or 2012. So they've got stuff on him. Go see a picture of him. There's a picture of Mitchell, Clinton, the Palestinian head, and Netanyahu all sitting together on the on like Wikipedia. You can see it. I'm just like, wow, this is incredible. So they blackmailed him too. So they were blackmailing people who were, they wanted to be in power, in negotiating power or positions of power. That's just one example. That's just like tip of the iceberg. That's nothing. Because there were 40 or 50 other girls, right? Or 100 other girls. Yeah. I mean, gosh, no, who knows what they have on Gates and all those other characters. My understanding is like, somebody told me, which I find credible, the day before or the 2 days before, I think Epstein was found dead on a Sunday morning. But apparently there were parties in Hollywood Hills before he died because everybody knew that they were going to grease him. They were going to kill him over that night. So they were happy. So there were groups of people like happy because they were going to be freed. So hopefully from the blackmail that he had on them. So they were all partying down, waiting for the event. Imagine, like, that's total like Eyes Wide Shut's inside stuff, you know?
That's what I'm thinking about. Yeah. But okay.
They couldn't allow him to live. He's not in Israel or somewhere else.
Why didn't he have the kill switch that I've heard people reference? Why was he could have enabled?
He might have. He switch, might have.
Right.
But I mean, here's
he didn't
the
protect
thing.
Himself.
A lot of those people didn't know they were probably being blackmailed on that at an industrial level. So once they realized it through his arrest, and then like people, you got blackmailed too. You got blackmailed, Bob. You got blackmail job. There's a bunch of dudes with wives and kids who are sweating bullets before he got killed, because if their information came out, you know, it would be a disaster for their reputation, their business. It actually happened to a guy. I think the head of Barclays Bank lost his job when they realized how closely connected he was to Epstein. So people were sweating. So he had to go. Epstein had to go. So
it makes me wonder why they didn't kill him sooner. Why did they allow it to go public? And is
like
that
like I said, they people didn't know the enormity.
They didn't know.
They just thought he was a freewheeling fun guy. Fun loving Jeff, you know. He can fix things for me. I can get things from him. He's got interesting friends in the modeling business. But then they're like, hold on, his whole place in the mansion was in New York was rigged with video cameras? I was there. You should go see like the list of people. People talk about the island. Think about how many people were in his mansion in New York City. Because he could just get the local glitterati or local cognoscenti or whatever you want to call it, could have come over for dinner and what else, you know? So, and she said, Drew Frey said she, a lot of bad stuff happened at that museum. So it was deep. It was very deep.
So if
the actually interesting thing too, is that Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's dad, was kind of like playing intelligence. He was really sharp. He was like playing intelligence agencies against each other. So he had connections with the KGB, MI5, and the CIA. Like he was that bright. He was playing like four-dimensional chess or something. And the Mossad, And the Mossad.
I've heard that about him. And then he fell off his own boat one night.
Yeah, they probably got rid of him. He probably got a little bit of out of control, like Epstein. Like things are going bad. Oh, got to cut our losses. But his real name was Abraham Laszlo. He was a super interesting guy, like a really amazing guy. Not a very nice person, but extraordinary. But his whole family was murdered in the war, so he was hyper motivated and not, you know, I think. When he died, there were like five or six prime ministers of the state of Israel buried him in Jerusalem, in the holy city. So,
wow. So, assuming that a lot of these people who are gathered at the island there with Epstein are also occultists or affiliated with different societies, is that a safe assumption to make?
I think so, to a certain extent, absolutely.
It made me wonder, you know, how much of this story first it made me say, why are we even privy to this information unless it's this revelation of the method practice? Could that be what we know they intend for us to know? Because
No. I don't think so. I think that they would have kept that whole thing quiet. I think it was supposed, I mean, those guys were going to the island on weekends and stuff like that. People knew that. Like, they knew that before they realized the enormity of the Epstein situation. So there are, like, quotes from, like, Bill Maher, like, is going to the island this weekend, see Russian women. So they were bringing people in for that whole thing. It was like a pleasure palace, you know. It was really a honeypot, but I think that a lot of that stuff was even known. So how much they want you to know, I think that there's definitely guys out there in the Epstein story trying to make sure the public understanding is not broader than it is. Just like I told you, nobody I know knows the Bill Mitchell or has discussed the Bill Mitchell Richardson context, because it was huge, because there's like probably another 100 guys. It's incredible power lever, right? If you have owned somebody and you get them into power, they're going to do what you want, you know? So I think the blackmail's always been around. There's that whole book by, what's her name? Whitney Webb, right? One Nation Under Blackmail. I think that's accurate.
Yeah, I haven't read that. I've heard her talk though. This whole underbelly, you know, the politicians, and it seems like it's easy to make the association with cases like the Franklin scandal. Would you say that these people are sometimes in both camps? Are there interrelated agendas that work here or not?
I don't know what you mean. Like, do you think that there's people involved in the Franklin scandal that are involved in Epstein? I don't know.
Well, I'm just thinking about the occultists, basically. Oh, right. A simplistic view, but the undercover sorcerers, you know, responsible for kidnapping children, or I can't recall all the details of that incident, but weren't they kidnapping and warehousing children?
For the Franklin scandal?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was all kinds of weird stuff going on. They're getting, you know, runaways, vulnerable kids, boys club type stuff. I think it even went to boys club is a Catholic, you know, group. So there was some guy, Father Val Peter, I think was his name. Yeah, so there's some sketchy things. But that reached all the way in, according to what John DeCamp it reached all the way to D.C., right?
Right, yeah.
That guy's still around. Like, weird thing was, is like that guy, the black guy who sang at the 1984 Republican National Committee thing, he was around in D.C. when I was there in the early 90s. Like, people knew his name. Forgot his name, is a black guy. But he was involved in he was part of the savings and loan scandals.
Yeah, yeah, I can't remember his name either.
But they said that, I think there was rumors that he was involved in the occult, and then you throw in what's the author's name? Who's the Gonzo author? Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh yeah,
mentioned in DeCamp, and then who's his acolyte to his Johnny Depp? And you just see these connections that are very disturbing.
Right. Yeah. I guess I'm just looking for a unifying theory. Right. For me, it's just that Lucifer is kind of the puppet master, and I just assume there are people in every organization that know ultimately who they're serving. But maybe that's not right. I don't know. Wasn't it?
There's definitely inside baseball. Like, it's a uniparty. They know each other. They may come to agreements on certain things. Some of them all have been puppeteered by intelligence agency. I think Congress is kind of like, so it's supposed to be the primary power, but there's much more powerful institutions now than Congress, and that is the Fed and the CIA. So how people perceive it, the public perceives what's going on. And I bet all of the, you know, the judges on the Supreme Court, they make some very strange decisions sometimes. So they're probably blackmailed too. People are trying to blackmail them. Yeah. And the presidents too. The presidents have probably all been selected over the last 30 years at least. Yeah. At least since maybe Kennedy or Carter.
That was another big flag for me. I was never a Trump supporter. I was always just kind of appalled at our choices. You know, that's kind of, even as a kid, I remember I went to I guess it was Bush Senior's inauguration. The Beach Boys sang on the. That's when I was living there. You know, it was all just fun.
1988.
It must have been. Yeah, not somewhere around there when Doug Williams won the Super Bowl too. I remember both of those things, but then I just remember. You know, I guess there was Clinton next, but then it was like when Bush Jr. came up for as a candidate. It just felt weird to me. It seemed I wouldn't have known this word at that time, but it's nepotism, right? It felt like is this a monarchy? Like we can, in this whole country full of all these bright people, can't we find somebody else? Like every kindergartner knows that, you know, you get somebody else a turn, right? And so that was the first time I remember just feeling put off by the choices that we have for president, you know, and still never becoming really over invested in any of it, the political, my ability to manipulate political outcomes as a voter. I've never been really excited about that. But now I would say it just feels like a charade, the whole thing. And especially when Donald Trump was it just seemed like that had to be an intentional gag almost. It feels like this magic we're talking about where it's like they just show you something ridiculous and pass it off as the truth, which it's actually happening. But I guess where the lie is that that's what's best for us, or that we somehow have participated in his arrival or in these people's, you know, ascending to power. I don't know. It just feels like a sham to me.
Probably is. I mean, they subverted him from the very beginning. I mean, they deposed three presidents in a row, the so-called deep state or the hidden powers or the hidden hand. Deep state is okay, but there is definitely a hidden hand of power, powerful people. If they disagree with you, they'll get rid of you. And I think they killed Kennedy in 63. They told Johnson, you can't run again. You're done. And he said, okay. Like this totally power mad, deranged new lunatic. He's like, okay, you don't want me to run. Okay. So he didn't run. And then Nixon, that whole thing, Watergate was pretty much a setup, I think, in my opinion. They were trying to get him out and subvert him. And what's his name? Howard Hunt is a full-on CIA agent who's involved in this. So it's like, come on, these are not just like your average. They want to make the public think that you're just average burglars. They're not. They're the ex-anti-Castro Cubans and stuff like that who are ballers. They are all ballers. A lot of those anti-Castro Cubans were very motivated, very angry people. So I think that the real history is much different than the public perception of history. I think the public perception of history is intentionally set so people don't know, like, all the MK killers and all this stuff. They weren't supposed to know. This is,
I recently read, I've been kind of following Bobby Kennedy's son. Is he RFK Jr.? Yeah. And, just kind of throughout the COVID deal, and his position on vaccines has been really enlightening and interesting to me. But he, listening to him talk about his dad and his uncle, he recommended a book, and I was trying to look for it. I think it was called Abomination. But I should.
How about A Lie Too Big to Fail?
A Lie Too Big to Fail? No, that wasn't it. I've heard that one. No. I'm pretty sure it's Abomination.
Abomination is a book I wrote. I hope you recommend it.
You read Abomination? Okay,
Abomination, Devil Worship and Deception, and the West Memphis Three Murders.
See,
I would be interested. Yeah. Was it about the RFK killing?
It was about the JFK killing, and it was the first.
Is it Unspeakable? It was probably Unspeakable.
Unspeakable. Yeah, that must be it. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that was it. And
I recommend that book too. It's good.
It was really revelatory for me, and it seemed well researched, and the arguments were very well founded, and it just left me again with just this horrible disgust and a disillusionment and a feeling of powerlessness, and just a bafflement, at people's willingness to just not care. I don't understand why people aren't in the streets right now saying they killed our president. You know, it's, I can't understand it.
You're disincentivized. There's all kinds of things they can do to maintain social control. So, I mean, that story really, I mean, they fought to get the real reality of that story out for decades. So there were a lot of people involved in that. And it was probably pretty perilous for, I mean, it was. There's so many dead bodies around the JFK murder. Hundreds, I think. 50 is probably too low. So many mysterious deaths and stuff. So there was a lot of social control involved. And you're dealing with very heavy-duty guys, man. Dulles and Rockefellers. All these people are surrounding this whole thing, the Rockefeller Foundation. And they did not want the truth to come out because people would riot. They probably would riot. But I think time has passed and the ability to control discourse has diminished. But and people have written books. I mean, it was a real tragedy for the whole country. Because I do think JFK, for all of his faults, and he was flawed, really was trying to ramp down this crazy rhetoric of nuclear war and conflict and trying to come to terms with things and have detente and lessen the missile crisis. And,
yeah, it's an important voice. It's an important message. It's relevant now, I would say, with the warmongering. So. That's the right term, but it's just...
Well, the U.S. has been warmongering since the end of World War II, so we've had a nice many, many decades of warmongering. But hold on just a second. So we've been at war for a long time. It's not great.
Yeah. I can see that. Like, you know, Vietnam, obviously that was related to Kennedy's, to Absolutely. The motivation and Kennedy's assassination.
And then policy changed right away.
Yeah.
Policy changed right away, put in a total lunatic in Johnson, who was very, very unusual guy.
It's I got halfway through another book about him. I heard he was a piece of work, or I've read that he was a piece of work.
Oh, he was a major piece of work.
The Gulf of Tonkin incident, right? That was, is that verifiably a false flag event?
Absolutely, no doubt. Tonkin, and then he did the USS Liberty. He was involved in all kinds of scurrilous stuff, like really crazy stuff. Murders. There's so many murders underneath him. You can probably lay the murder of MLK under him pretty close.
That's right.
They were definitely harassing him. He was good friends with J. Edgar Hoover, which is really weird. Like, he had very interesting friends in weird places you wouldn't expect for a guy kind of from rural Texas. But he was really a piece of work, man. He was really super racist. He'd say the N-word to people to their face. Just really
as president.
Yeah, there's like parts of his own biographer. Was it Robert Caro? Like, oh yeah, just really, like, you'll always be a blankety blank. You just say stuff to be really aggressive and big and smoke 3 packs of cigarettes a day. Like, he was just an engine and died young, 64, pretty young. I mean, but
so this is would you say he was just a controllable figure? He was an owned figure. He wasn't there because of any other reason than he was going to bend to the will of whoever was creating the agenda.
I think that he was just a manipulator, you know, and so there was an interest for him, and other people had interest in a lot of people wanted JFK dead. So when they had a line of succession. So when he got, they go, Johnson, he'll be in there and he'll cover it up and we'll control him and he'll put whoever we want onto the Warren Commission and he can bully everybody. And that's really what happened.
The right mix of ambition and
ruthlessness, cunning, murder. Yeah. He'd already had tons of murders in Texas. His sister died suspiciously. There were all these people who died suspiciously there. So they knew who he was. They knew he rigged elections. They knew everything. So he was their man.
Would you say that there's been sort of a consistency in regime since World War II? or since when?
I don't know. It's hard to say. There's been very different. I mean, Truman to Eisenhower, right, to JFK.
Yeah, disregarding JFK, which is why they killed him, I guess, maybe. But yeah.
I mean, Eisenhower, nobody was going to touch him. He was kind of untouchable because as a warrior. But I think he was there seeing this growth. He okayed a lot of pretty heavy-duty stuff, like the Operation Ajax, which is the overthrow of Mossadegh. And I think he was involved in what it went down in Guatemala, one of the countries, Honduras. So these overthrows, like he was involved in that. But he, you know, he gave his famous kind of military industrial complex speech.
Right. Yeah.
So to say that, I don't know. I think the power structure is what stayed the same. Maybe the president's changed, but that power structure was always there. And it always wanted to get fed, you know, so.
Yeah.
It always wanted to get fed. So I think that's really it. I mean, you have this huge, you know, multinational, you know, it's not even the military industrial. It's just a whole, you know, Wall Street needs to dip its beak. So if people screw up with that, if any president screws up with that, they're in deep trouble.
What do you think Kennedy was talking about in his famous speech where he talked about the unseen?
The monolithic.
Yeah.
I think he was intimating that there was a secret kind of cabal behind things. I think he was right. That was the American University. I mean, I think that really if people want to study something very interesting is watch him talk all the way through 1963. Like he must have been driving these people crazy. Their eyeballs were about to shoot out of their head. Because he was talking about racial reconciliation, and you know there was a lot of hardballers back there, and the KKK was literally still around, and so the white racists around, and there's a lot of those cops literally were like at the murder of JFK, they were wearing some of these KKK patches, believe it or not. So there was a lot of hard right people, especially in the South, that did not. We're not warming up to what JFK was saying. So.
Wow. It's just tragedy. It's still mind blowing that he was executed in the street, in public, on TV. And then.
Well, it's an interesting thing you say that because he was not in great health. And they knew that he took shots from Dr. Feelgood and he was getting monitored for Addison's. They probably could have just had somebody in there. And just lace his food or do something like that.
Right.
I don't think that was it. I think the point was to humiliate him and have a very powerful public ritual. So, and I think it was. So they blew his head off and then they had this huge event over those 4 days. Remember, there's only three major public stations, ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yeah.
So they, when he got shot, I think on a Friday, and then, I think it was Tippit got shot too. And then on the Sunday, then Lee Harvey Oswald's drag out and shot by Ruby. And that was just like a whole weekend, this whole massive display. So you can see the similarities between the JFK killing and 9/11, where you just had people warped in, walked in, and there's this huge melodrama of the killing the king. And there's the little John comes out and this says it. And so the whole country is just totally involved in that and fed the lie that Oswald was, you know, some communist sympathizer.
Right.
It was super powerful. Now, I think all three of them got buried on a Monday. So Tippit, JFK, and Oswald were all put in the ground the next day. Yeah, incredible.
And then the same thing happened to his brother. That's, well, a similar thing. Who obviously wasn't president yet, but yeah, it's just.
Their people hated the Kennedys, man. They were just not part of the structure. They were wealthy. The dad was, you know, a talented financier, but Irish, Catholic, they just were not. They were oil and water to kind of the old WASP Eastern elite. Yeah,
They weren't in the society. They weren't.
I just think that they weren't really accepted members. And I think they always felt it. So there were just always tensions between them. So I think that it grew to this terrible, disastrous end. I mean, that's why they were on the left, I think. And It just were like, you know, two different magnets you could never really attach, where all these other guys were. And it was a kind of a, you know, ethno control of all these usually wasps who could get along with each other. And then here comes these guys who aren't listening. I'm not going to support you at the Bay of Pigs. I'm not going to go through these notions of power. I don't trust you guys at the CIA. So that's just driving these other people who used to being, you know, running, pulling the strings of power, like, and we're pulling it in a big way around the country and the world. They're like, oh, this isn't good for us. I mean, the firing of Dulles, like, he was part of the power structure going back all the way, he and his brother, right? So it was Sullivan Cromwell, like, that's the big white shoe Wall Street firm. So they're all connected with the Wall Street and into Intel, and Dulles is just a heavy hitter on so many different things. So he knew all the paperclip people. I mean, just like, Dulles is really something else. Wow. So yeah, it was an incredible time really in the United States history. Because when that changed, so many people died. There were so many people sent off. We talk about, like, we lost 50,000 in Vietnam, which is a disaster. It was a cultural disaster, social disaster. The U.S. killed millions of people there. They power bombed. There were like 2 million Vietnamese dead, huge amounts of strife and carpet bombing of Laos and Cambodia. It was a disaster. It was a disaster. So it was, I mean, you kind of, and it, I mean, like, all these kids got chewed up in this big power play too. Like, the average kid in Vietnam was 19. Usually from a poor country, you know, a poor part of the U.S. They were not people who could get. I think they're like five or six people from Ivy League schools who died in Vietnam. So all these poor kids without the resources got ramped up and sent over there to die for nothing, absolutely nothing. And they made a lot of money, like Bell Helicopter and stuff. It's all tied into Johnson. All this, he had all his friends at Brown and Root and all these other places. That was his thing. So. The war benefited those guys. Johnson died with tons of money. He never really had a job, but he had millions and millions of dollars. Like, he made tons of money at a ranch and all this stuff. Nobody knows where his money came from. So,
and the resistance to that was subverted by maybe the CIA through occultists like Timothy Leary. Is that kind of the idea, that the genuine resistance to Vietnam was kind of hijacked by the hippie culture movement?
I think so. I think it was used to subvert it. Absolutely. Yeah. Tune in, drop out, tune out, drop in. What was it? You're supposed to tune drop in, out. Yeah.
Yeah. Drop in, tune in, and tune out, or something like that.
So you're supposed to drop out of the system. So you stop fighting. But there was a huge, very powerful anti-Vietnam, I think, to the benefit of this country. Like, Vietnam was just a war of choice. That was a disaster. You know, if you don't comply with the U.S. State, they call you a communist, even if you're not, or if you aren't. And then that's the reason to go in. It's anti-communism. We got to get rid of it. So, and Ho Chi Minh apparently was my understanding, I'd have to go back and check this, but he was really kind of more of a, kind of a standard liberal. He just wanted kind of autonomy and self-determination. And the U.S. said no. We're going to step into the place of the French. So he's like, well, who's going to support me for autonomy and self-determination? The Russians. Okay, well, I'm going to take money from them then. I'm going to take weapons from them because you're not going to give it to me. So, that was it's a disaster. A lot of I'm not for, like, I'm not the guy, the gung-ho guy for all these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a perfect example. Like, why the hell are we there? That's so stupid. Total waste. It's just a big money grab. It's just like Orwell said. Orwell got it down. All these wars only benefit people at the top. It's always some kind of like flim-flam job where they make all the money, Halliburton and all these other people, and the poor people get hosed. And they need to have, the U.S. has to have a very competent, effective propaganda piece to get people to believe that it's worth us to be there. You know, it's like,
Enter 9/11,
Inter 9/11, Inter Grand. What is it? The mighty Wurlitzer, right? And just power propagandize people. So.
Saddam's
always somebody
nuclear.
Else. Yeah, right. I mean, we can go.
I was in Kandahar in 2002.
Wow, so you're right there.
I was a National Guardsman. You know, I just was kind of floundering and lost my Pell Grant, so couldn't pay for college anymore. And the state I was living in had a tuition exemption program, so I joined. And then not long
after,
got shipped out. Yeah.
How long were you there for?
We were there for 9 months. Wow. Long enough to, get veteran status as a guardsman, which they were trying to get everybody in and out in a short enough amount of time that they didn't have to dole that out. But I was, I guess we were fortunate in that way. So I got to buy my house with the VA loan, you know.
But, nice. That's good.
Good but yeah, while we were there, we invaded Iraq while we were in Afghanistan. I remember that. And we were kind of semi-aware of the argument taking place, whether or not he had nukes or not. But ultimately, you're just trying to make it through the day. It was hot, dry, and boring most of the time.
That's good. That's good. That's,
yeah. That's, oh, yeah. Uneventful. Yeah.
Some of those guys were like firefights all the time, right? Just like shooting all day.
Yeah. We were there as basically working alongside like Brown and Root to rebuild the Kandahar airport that we had blown up previously.
Yeah, that was that was the real center base, really, was the Kandahar airport. They spent billions of dollars on that.
Yeah, I guess we were there early enough. We were still building housing for the troops and then kind of converting the terminal into our headquarters. Yeah, it's an interesting time.
Yeah, now it's going to go back, and that's going to go back in between the powers between Russia and China now. They're going to get squeezed. This new agreement between Putin and Xi. A lot of those countries are going to get some interest. As the Belt and Road keeps going through all there, it'll be very interesting.
I'm not up to date on all that.
Well, the Chinese were trying to kind of get a trade route, kind of like the old Silk Road, going back into Europe, but with roads and stuff like that, which would go through somewhere around there, Central Asia. So.
Really?
That happens, yeah.
Just like for over the road trucking?
Belt and Road, yeah.
Like our interstate system?
Yeah, even more. I think they were going to try to put high-speed trains to just kind of get goods to and from. So
sounds like a good idea on its face, right? Seems like an obvious thing to do. You can have peace.
Yeah, or war. You can ship your troops quicker.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, hey, can I ask you, I know you've been really patient with me. I appreciate it. I just see what time it is.
It's 1:37 my time, yeah.
Okay. I heard you mention recently in one of your interviews with somebody that, and you didn't, I've never heard you share what this is, but I think I've heard you refer to it a couple times. Maybe it's not something that you want to discuss, but if it is, I'd love to hear it. I'm trying to think of the context in which I most recently heard you talk about it. It might have been with talking to Joe Atwell, kind of towards the end of that chat you guys had. But basically, I think you had kind of provided a defense of Crowley's sincerity in doing magic. And then you were putting forth that you yourself come from a biblical worldview and that you do believe in sort of the supernatural realm.
Yeah,
and then
you
mentioned that you had experiences that couldn't be explained by the natural world or a naturalistic worldview. But I don't think I've ever heard you say what those experiences are.
And I've had a lot, some I'll never tell, but I've had pretty intense deja vu, at least that. But I've definitely had responses to prayer. So, I mean, they're, some things you just can't mention. So,
right. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I understand that. I think I would feel the same way about maybe sharing things that were personal between me and God, things that he's done for me that
you know.
I'll tell you this, like, I wasn't really, I mean, I grew up in a Christian family. I wasn't really, like, a believer. I wasn't, like, one of those kids who was, like, a pastor's kid or something. I went to church. I listened. I did what I was told. But I would say, like, when I really was curious about what's the real nature of reality, when I was trying to figure things out, when I was 17, like, I put my hand up to see if God was there, and that hand was already there. The hand was already there. So, oh, he was waiting for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful and amazing. That's awesome. I mean, I've done that. I've laid in bed and stuck my hand up in the air. I'm not kidding.
So everybody's different. You know, that's the whole thing. Everybody has a different thing. But
yeah.
My suggestion to people who aren't believers is start reading your Bible.
I've had
your prayer.
I've had my moments.
Yeah, do your own thing. That's the best thing, is not to rely on a priest. I mean, there's a place for that, but do your own homework and follow the gospel and do the simple things and just ask God, if you're there, show me, you know, show me. That's all.
Yeah. That's a theme that I've heard in my search. And in fact, I've heard a lot of Catholics say that recently, where I guess it's just a Christian idea. If you call out, you know, look for him, knock and the door will be open type of thing, maybe, that he won't leave you alone to yourself. So I've been kind of practicing that more lately.
There's so many stories of Christians who, like, they say the same thing. Like, it changed. I became a Christian just like that. Some people change on the dot. Some people have long transformative spots. People go through a dark night of the soul. There's all kinds of different things, but everybody's different. But I know what happened to me. So I've never changed. I've never lost my faith. I totally have a biblical worldview. Jesus is the Messiah. He's the Jewish Messiah. He's Jewish. And that was 2,000 years ago. But that's the most important person who has ever lived. And the problems that he solves are universal problems for humanity, death and sin. So everybody, all religions have that problem. Like, the problem of man is that you're not going to be around. And what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to live the right life? And all that stuff is solved. So all those other kind of phony teachers, and that sets Christ apart from all the other wise men, all the other philosophers. Everybody else on earth is a totally different structure and standard of his personage. And the Catholic teaching of the triune God or the triumvirate God is fake. It's false. They're different beings. There's a Father, there's the Son, there's the Holy Spirit. They're not all part of, like, one mosh group. Different personalities. Yeah.
Oh, so the Catholics are like,
so they have this kind of view,
in that way.
They have that.
I didn't know that.
One part of that idea.
I did not know that. Okay,
but Christ is clearly praying. He's clearly praying to God. He's praying our fathers. He's talking, I'm going to the right hand of the Father. So he's not going back into some kind of cosmic, you know, spirit Godhead or some nonsense, you know.
And then
some people have that view, like they're it's not biblical.
Yeah, for a lot of people, for people who are just not on the journey or who haven't really explored their Christianity, it's kind of like splitting hairs to some. But the personage of the three entities, right? I guess it is. I don't know. I haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about it, about why it's important, except that, I'm glad that they're accessible. I'm glad that Jesus was a person and I can relate to him in that way. And that's kind of the extent of it. I know he spoke about the Holy Spirit as another person also.
Right, I'll send you the Holy Spirit.
He said, I have to leave or else the other guy can't come, basically, right? It's interesting, the relational dynamics between those three, how they were living and community before the creation, even. It kind of makes sense.
I mean, that's what I think it's Paul teaches. Is it 2 Corinthians that, you know, part of creation was through Christ before time or something like that? I can't remember. I'd have to go back and redo it. But then, like, in front of the Sanhedrin, Christ is talking to the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. He says, yeah, before Abraham, I was.
I am.
And they all freaked out. There I am. Yeah.
So, yeah, they tore their ribs. That's when they wanted to kill him, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, they always wanted to kill him, right? But that was one that was really beneficial. Or for them, I guess. But yeah. So there's a lot of mysteries there. There's definitely a lot of mysteries in the Bible. But you can get a lot of clarity, too, by just reading it. Some of the mysteries can go away. But every time I read through it or listen to it, I learn to get different elements, a different aspect of it, get broad in my understanding, see how the pieces work together. So,
yeah. I think it's magical in that way. Like, speaking of magic, you know, and magic books, I guess I can't deny that I feel like, you know, this book, the Bible, in the way that it's been able to apply itself to me at specific times, it statistically seems impossible. And so that it could be magic in that way on a particular day where I need, or I'm coming here for guidance, and what I'm receiving is written in such a way that it has multiple entendres, right? Not just double entendres, because I might come back 2 years later and it'll speak something else to me, the same passage. It does feel magic in that way. And that there can be magic in words, even written words or spoken words. I feel like the Bible is evidence of that reality in my own life. It's like, it kind of helps me understand the magic that, you know, these occult groups think they wield, or maybe they do wield, through their readings and their spell casting and the words and the, I don't know, but
they're trying to manipulate forces, I think, a lot differently than asking God to intervene in your life. I would say that's totally different. They're trying to, through their rituals and words and sounds and stuff like that, get power for themselves. But I think the Christian is asking Christ in heaven for insight, or show me the way, or, you know, answer my prayers, or get me through this tough time. So I think that the style and approach are polar opposites. Yeah.
Yeah. There could be some type of perversion, or isn't that kind of the deal where they,
well, who knows? I mean, maybe even the, I mean, if you're thinking, like, if you're like a Satanist, you're asking, you know, the devil for whatever, you know, whatever he can provide. All right. So that's a lot. That's not what's happening in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's not happening in the New Testament.
So who's the most prominent person you can think of in government or in pop culture that is openly admitting to, you know, belief or worship? Like, I'm thinking of Sammy Davis Jr., right? Right, and then the guy with the
Satanist, yeah.
Right, he's gone, right? And then the guy with the huge eyebrows,
Aquino,
right? He was
LaVey was out there. LaVey. They're open. They're in the public. I guess you would say that guy from the Temple of Satan. I guess that would be the most open, notorious guy. What's that guy's name?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I know what he looks like. So
I'm frozen up again.
He's around. So I'd say that he's kind of fulfilling that role. There's the more dangerous ones are the ones you don't know or look like, you know, your local pickleball player. Those are the most dangerous ones. they're out there.
Right. Yeah.
The philosophy of Satan are much more different than these kind of like ridiculous caricatures of Satan's.
Yeah, that's right. They're a caricature. They're like a caricature of Satan.
They're playing their role. They're playing their role, yeah.
That's how I feel about Trump sometimes. It's like he's a caricature.
He's playing
of
his role.
Yeah.
He's got Masonic heritage or something. There's something going on.
Yeah.
You know, and he, there's some real issues there.
I agree.
Yeah, issues, yeah. So, I mean, I think that they're, you know, he's like the hero for those people, the kind of right wing, maybe not the most, you know, kind of middle class people. Like that's his thing. Like, he does not act like them, I can assure you. You know, that's not kind of the salt of the earth guy. That guy's rolling through prostitutes and porn stars and sketchy business practices and
He's kind of interchangeable with the prosperity guy.
He kind of Joel Osteen. Right.
Yeah, he's like a Joel Osteen for political people who need a political hero.
Good,
I guess.
Good analogy, I would say.
But as far as people of influence, respectable people, like I think Marx, right, was at one point in his life was openly satanic. Is that correct?
Yeah, like he wrote he's known to have written like satanic poetry and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. Is there any equivalent to that today that you're aware of? Just people of influence, like I think of like Richard Dawkins or Neil deGrasse Tyson, right? I would love to just for one of them to just say, look, okay, the real objection I have to your God is that I'm a Satanist, right? Because that would make more sense. Just the adamant approach to atheism doesn't even make sense. It's like, why do you even care? Just
right. Like a real Satanist would lie, though, right? They wouldn't say they were Satanists to your face. So
yeah,
I don't know.
That's right.
I don't know. I don't know who that person would be. Like an obvious occultist. Who is promoting occultist? Amen. Eccles. I don't know. So I think that the philosophy, the ideas, those people who are really kind of satanic in their sense, a bit like the Bush family. I think the Rockefeller, the modern Rockefeller family is totally occulted. So.
I know so little about them. They're still around. They're still Rockefellers.
Well, David passed away, I think, 10 years ago. Nelson. But I think that, the son, Lawrence Ross Rockefeller, was a huge New Ager. He supported tons of people in the New Age. A lot of the people that you see around today, like John Mack, and he had a connection to Esalen. Lawrence Rockefeller was a really interesting guy, but he was putting his money into kind of cutting edge, New Age, esoteric type stuff. So
that new age stuff is prolific. It's been interesting to me to see how it's worked its way into the Christian churches.
The ufology, all this stuff. Marianne Williamson or whatever her name is. The Course in Miracles. It's all over the place.
The Secret, right? Yeah. I kind of remember when Oprah went from Christian to New Age. And took a lot of people along for the ride with her. Just thinking along those lines, where we used to call it the name it, claim it gospel, or prosperity gospel, prosperity. But it's kind of the same idea where you're manifesting destiny, That's an interesting term.
That's not Christian, That's
manifest
like
destiny.
But the whole standard of Christ's standard is you become, Christian, you become clean, and then everything is added to you. So you're supposed to kind of fulfill your walk of being a good follower of Christ, and then everything's added. So when those people start talking about stuff like that, there's actually a title of the Joel Osteen book, which I have. It's like, Do What You Will or something crazy like that.
Oh,
it's like
really?
It's off the charts. It's like right out of the New Age. It's like, what are you talking about? I'll see if I can find it.
That's hilarious. I know he had the one, Every Day's a Friday. It's like, unless you live in the ghetto, then every day just sucks.
Right.
They just forget about entire groups of people.
You will, I think is his book or something. Yeah. I mean, he's done well for himself. He's got Ferraris. It's good.
Yeah, I'm here in Houston, the city of Houston. I understand.
Oh, you're in Houston. Wow. So you know it all.
Well, I don't. I worked as a real estate appraiser right now I'm just don't have much work at all, but I was doing a lot of appraisal work inside Beltway 8 and in an area called River Oaks, where a lot of these mansions are. And I've been near his neighborhood, and I see his church that was, I think, donated to him by the city.
Oh, wow. That's right. Wasn't it like a rehab, like a stadium or something?
Yeah, it was like a basketball facility.
The abundance mindset, the power of I am, two words that will change your life today. I can't find the old title, though. There was one that was really bad.
The power of I am?
The power of I am. Yeah, there it is. There's another one, though.
That's another thing that
he's put out a lot of books.
These celebrities are kind of... what's the word? Appropriating I am, right? basically making gods of themselves. I don't know if Mark Devlin, I've probably encountered some of that in his stuff. He talks a lot about that. Hmm. Where they liken themselves to Christ or to Yahweh. I can think of one song right now off the top of my head where the chorus is kind of a mockery of the name Yahweh and I am.
Hmm. Yeah, I can't find it. There's one that's really bad. I don't know where it is. You can, you will. That's it. That's the one. You can, you will. Like it's will, your power of will to overcome stuff.
It's bizarre.
Okay, whatever, yeah. Pretty wild.
I was, I've just had bad experience with that. I mean, intellectually, obviously, it doesn't cut the mustard, right? But then.
He's doing well for himself. He's doing very well for himself.
Oh, yeah. It's working.
Look at it within context. Yeah.
It's working great for him. But as a consumer of that philosophy, it just falls on its face, especially when you encounter it as a suffering person, right?
Right. That's even worse. Yeah.
I was brought to one of these healing services. There was this guy. I was really sick for a couple of years. And my uncle, who was in this denomination that was very prosperity centered, he asked me to come and attend this healing service, you know, because he loves me, right? He wanted me to be well. So I did it for him. And I just sat there in the back, kind of praying the whole time. And my prayer was, make this guy tell the truth, you know? And, you know, he went through his testimony, and part of his testimony was the influence he has in Hollywood. And what right before he gave the altar call, he said, play this song. This is the last song Michael Jackson wanted to hear before he died. And then he was like, everybody with cancer, come up here. And eventually it's like my turn to go down. And I was like so desperate, so sick. I could barely walk, you know, I'm just exhausted and sad at the same time because I can feel the insincerity of the whole experience. And I'm baffled at the reaction of the hundreds of people around me. It felt like they're all under a spell, you know, but it's at the same time, I could kind of relate because when you're suffering, you know, you'll take anything. You just want to be, you want relief, right? And I went up and my uncle kind of ushered me up there. He was kind of prominent in the church. And the guy was like, I was like last in line. And before he like put his hand on my shoulder, but he didn't look me in the eyes. He looked over my shoulder and he says to his security guy, he says, don't let anybody out of here before I have a chance to pitch this. And he holds up a CD.
Wow.
And I was like, there's
he had
the truth.
Set audience for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's
my
truth.
New CD. Yeah. There it is.
And then he was like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, well, this, that, and the other. And he, you know, did his,
that's too bad,
set his spell, and then it was over. But I just felt like God actually answered my prayer in that moment because what I wanted more than to be well was for the truth to be told. I'm not trying to be self-aggrandizing or whatever, but it's the most important thing, right? The desire for truth, at least that I'm aware of. It's more important than our desire to be wealthy or healthy or really anything, right? Because the truth is what sets us free. Jesus self-described himself as the truth. But the truth, that's what we're after, right? And that's what you made a career out of, pursuing truth. And
kind of have.
Yeah. I'm thankful for your work. It's blessed me.
Right, good. I'm glad. I'm glad that I meet people who, you know, you've kind of edified. It's kind of makes it worthwhile, you know.
In regards to my faith practice journey, it's interesting, you know. Like I said before, like I'm meeting with a priest tonight, and one thing that I'm certain will not change is my dependence on Christ and the figure of Christ and his word, you know. What may open up to me is an understanding of, you know, Catholicism or whatever it might be, or I may be required to be content to, you know, just not be adjoined to a body of believers in a corporate setting. I don't know. But really, I've just
been longing for that, you know, for ritual and for communion. And I understand that those two things aren't.
You should try Orthodoxy. Why don't you try the Orthodox Church? They make a claim that they go all the way back to Christ. You have tons of ritual, get communion, and go to church. I don't know what they have in Houston.
I don't know how different they are than... I'm just kind of starting here because I met... Honestly, I was at the park with my kids the other day, and I met a guy who was evangelizing for the Catholics. And he's... You know, it's the you know them by their fruit. This guy, I just know he's a loving guy.
Right.
Yeah, so... And that's been my experience with a lot of Catholics, really. In spite of whatever flaws that may exist, I guess I see it like Jesus said that the tares would be sown among the wheat, right? And I kind of interpret that to mean there's not going to be a church without tares in it, right? Maybe there will be. I don't really know. I just know that I believe there is wheat in the Catholic Church, just as there's wheat even in that congregation that I visited and got prayed over by a lunatic. You know? So I just have to be careful not to compromise myself in my pursuit.
I wish I could help you. I cannot solve the problem of denominations.
Please,
there's
come on.
Probably just a denomination for everybody. Lutheran, Assemblies of God. As long as you don't become a new apostolic Reformation, that'd probably be your worst choice.
Where I don't even know what that is.
Good. You become an apostle or some kind of Audi language type Christian or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know what NAR was until like 5 years ago. I'd never heard of that. But apparently it's like a big movement. Like it's the returned, you know, apostolic era. So everybody gets these flowery titles and they're like literally like play acting. I don't know.
Are they having all like things in common? They merge their bank accounts?
I don't know.
That's the other thing. That's one thing that I've been trying to reconcile basically my whole adult life since I've been pursuing truth, right? Is I was never very, there are things I'm ambitious about, right? I have interests that I pursue actively, right? But one thing that I've never felt comfortable pursuing is wealth for its own sake, you know? And so that's probably has a lot to do with why I don't have much, but it's always enough, you know? He has always provided enough for us. So,
Andrew, I got to run. It's at 2 hours. I got to go.
Oh, man.
I got another meeting. Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's good talking with you.
Yep. You too, William.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Cheers.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.